OK, so first of all, thanks to the organizers for inviting me here to give this talk. Today I'm going to speak about this experiment that is called Sequest and what type of reach for dark sectors we can have in the coming years. So I start with a small introduction. I think you will see this type of slides for like 100 times during this conference. Let me go through just very quickly why we're interested in dark sectors. So in general, we would like to answer if the weak scale, right, is the right scale for dark matter. So if instead of a WIMP, we have maybe something at a different scale, this can be, for example, a little bit lighter or quite lighter than the electroweak scale. And then we are led to think about more rich dark sectors because we know that dark matter needs light mediators. Of course, once that you start thinking about dark sectors, you open up a Pandora box, so you can write down a lot of new interactions, a lot of new particles. So there is, of course, a question about minimality. We know this standard model is not really minimal, so maybe why not also the dark sector contain maybe more than just one particle. So, of course, once that you think about dark sectors, we have to understand how we do our measurements to test these new sectors. So what is the connection between the dark sector and us? And then, as we all know, right, as also Natalia was discussing, we have these three portals, three renormalizable operators that are connecting one particle in the dark sector and one particle in the standard model sector. And then you have this nice connection between your dark matter and the standard model. Of course, thinking about a scenario like this, if you think about a model like this, you conclude that typically, you know, generically, you have pretty much suppressed signals at direct detection as well as at colliders. Of course, you have bounds from cosmology, but in general, these scenarios are you know, more hidden than the classic WIMP scenarios. Now, we have these parameters, so this epsilon, for example, this kappa, do not have a dimension. So in principle, they can be any, you know, number. This is, you know, in general, three parameter in a simplified model. If you write down a more complete model, you will know what these numbers are. But this to say that since we would like to understand generically, right, how to probe these type of dark sectors, we would like to be as broad as possible in testing this epsilon or kappa or y. And actually, depending on the value of these parameters, you're led to think about dark particles that are either prompt, that are decaying prompt to the standard model, if this epsilon, for example, is relatively large. And if you take a smaller and smaller epsilon, this dark photon will be more and more long-lived, right? So, for example, in this plot, just to back up what I just said in words, what I'm showing is indeed the lifetime of the dark photon as a function of its mass for different values of epsilon that I'm fixing. So here we have epsilon 10 to the minus 8 to here 10 to the minus 2. And we see that, of course, we are led to think about relatively long-lived dark photons, as also Jonathan was arguing this morning. So we would like really to have an experimental program that is trying to search for both, you know, dark sectors that are very much promptly decaying to dark sectors that are more and more long-lived. In general, you know, if you want to still stick with the idea of thermal dark sectors, so dark sectors that at a certain point were in thermal equilibrium with the standard model, you know that this epsilon cannot be too tiny because otherwise the connection between the dark sector and the standard model is too small. And then you will have, indeed, a lower bound on this epsilon that, as we compute in this paper, is, say, at around 10 to the minus 8 or so. So this gives us really a lower bound of what we should be able to probe experimentally to fully test this type of thermal scenario. Okay. Now, having said that, let's see what type of experiments and what type of searches we can do to test relatively long-lived particles, right? So As we have already seen this cartoon, we have plenty of fixed target experiments. So the idea of a fixed target experiment is pretty simple. You have a beam, high intensity beam that is colliding on a target. Afterwards, we might have some dump, so some big some sample of matter, and then afterwards you look at either dark matter beams or standard model particles propagating this decay volume, and afterwards you have your detector. Okay, so it's a pretty simple idea. Now we know that, so here I'm focusing on electron or proton fixed target experiments. So if you focus on proton fixed target experiments, we know that we had several of these experiments in the past. So I am showing here CHARM and LSND because these are the two experiments that I will discuss a little bit later during this talk. So the most important numbers, if you want, are the numbers of protons on target. So what is the intensity of this proton beam? What is its energy? As we see from this table, we had in the past a proton fixed target experiment, both at high energy, 400 GeV, as well as at relatively low energy, 400 MeV, as well as what are the two lengths of the dump as well as the decay volume, because these two lengths are telling you how much long-lived these dark sector particles can be. So this is for the past. Let's look at now, what is running now, and what will or can run in the future. So now, as we see, we have the SeQuest experiment as well as NA62. So these are the numbers corresponding to these experiments. As well as in the future, we'll hopefully have this SHIP experiment as well as PHASER. Now I'm putting all these numbers together so that we can have quite a bit of comparison. So we see that all these experiments, of course, have a very high intensity, so a lot of protons on target. Different energies, so relatively high energy, 120 GeV for SeQuest, 400 for these experiments here at CERN, as well as the LHC energy for PHASER. And then if you look at these numbers, you see that SeQuest, contrary to the other experiments, is relatively compact. You see here, we are speaking about a 10 order 10 meter of experiment. Okay. So let's look at SeQuest a little bit more in detail. So let's start with the Fermilab accelerator complex. Okay. So here in the main injector, we know that we have this 120 GeV proton beam running. Okay, we know that actually this proton beam will become more and more intense, we know that presently part of this beam, 5% of this main injector beam, is sent to this experiment, to the SeQuest experiment. Okay, and so this is a cartoon for this experiment. So you see here you have this proton beam, target, a dump, so this is 5 meters of iron, okay? And then after the dump, we see that we have several tracking stations that are extending up to, say, 25 meters or so, okay? Now, also, what you see is that, so basically, both the dump and this K-magnet, so these are two magnets, okay? And what is interesting is that, let's look here. So first of all, this is a compact geometry. Overall, this is the 25 meter of experiment. Also, what is quite important is that we have this K-mag that is giving a little kick to the charged particles that are coming out from here. We're speaking about a kick, a transverse kick of something like half a GeV. And so if you want to give you a little bit of history, so this experiment has been running, say, since I think 2012 or so. There have been some previous runs that actually were looking for prompt muons, okay? So muons that were directly coming from these proton-proton collisions, okay? And of course, if you're interested to displace dark sectors, this wouldn't be captured in the previous runs. But what is very interesting for us is that since April 2017, so since a year, experimentalists have installed a displaced trigger. So basically now what you can do is to look for muons that come after the dump, say displaced muons with a displacement of 5.5 meters. Okay. Now last year they had some collection of data, a little bit of data, over a 5 days of running, collecting something like few 10 to the 16 protons on target in these few days. Okay. And the experiment apparently has been approved for a physics run for the coming, say, 2 years or so, collecting something like 10 to the 18 protons on target. Okay. Also, what you see here is indeed an experiment that is very sensitive and can reconstruct pretty well muons, thanks to all these tracking stations. And then some work in progress is to understand what is the feasibility and what is the importance of upgrading this experiment, as you see here, inserting some electromagnetic calorimeter here in place of the absorber wall. Okay. And this, there is a plan of taking an electromagnetic calorimeter from the Phoenix experiment and shipping it to Fermilab and installing it here. Okay. So this is just a little bit of history for this experiment. Now, for this talk, so what are the questions? So we would like to understand what is the physics case of installing the electromagnetic calorimeter here. So what are the type of dark sectors that we'll be sensitive to? Also, what is the physics case of having future runs? So is that the case of collecting more than these 10 to the 18 protons on target that has already been planned? And so what I will discuss with you is actually the reach for a few dark sector models. So we'll discuss about dark photons, dark matter models, we'll see inelastic dark matter models, as well as dark scalars and axions. And all the plots that you see are taken from this recent paper that we sent out last week. So let's start with a little bit of details of the analysis that we did. So first of all, what about the fiducial regions? So what type of displacement are we aiming for? So we took three fiducial regions. So either you produce a dark particle that is that has this lifetime between 5 and 6 meters. So you are before the first tracking station, okay, and then it decays to electrons. Or you consider a fiducial region between 5 and 9 meters, so just before K-mag. Or between 5 and 12 meters, so before the end of the K-mag. Okay? So when I will show you the reach, you will always see three lines corresponding to these three fiducial regions. Okay? Now, in terms of signatures, we see that we have analyzed the dielectron signatures. So, for example, a dark photon decaying to 2 electrons, as we see from this diagram. So we'll analyze both resolved type of signature, also signatures involving missing energy. So 2 electrons plus missing energy. And then also we'll see that we'll speak a little bit about the possibility of detecting photons, so dark sectors are giving you photons in the final state, as well as mesons. So these are the two luminosities that I will discuss. 10 to the 18 protons on target, the approved luminosity, and 10 to the 20. This is some, future goal that we see how much we gain, right? Continuing this experiment, collecting much more data. And finally, just a few comments about the backgrounds. Now, if you focus on dielectron signatures, you might wonder about, what are the backgrounds, so what type of standard model processes could give you 2 electrons in the final state that are displaced. Now, we did some estimate for this 5 to 6 fiducial region here. There might be some background coming from K-long decay, but actually our estimate tell us that at least for this fiducial region, this background should be pretty small. Okay. Of course, it will be more complicated to understand the exact backgrounds for larger fiducial regions, so this 5 to 9 or even more 5 to 12. And this is also a call for more experimental studies that would be needed to understand how much background we would have, especially for this much larger fiducial region. So the reach that I will show you correspond always to 10 signal events. And then, as I said, it would be really great to have experimental studies to understand if 10 signal events could correspond to an exclusion, or we have to require more signal events because maybe we have some background. Okay. So that's a little bit of discussion of the analysis we did. Now let's look a bit at models, right? So we start with dark photon models, minimal dark photon as well as inelastic dark matter. Asher this morning he discussed about SIMS and he showed a nice rich plot for this type of model, so I won't discuss this again. So let's start with the dark photon, minimal dark photon model, right? So what is good about sequest for dark photons is that we expect to have really a huge event rate. So you can compute the production of dark photons at sequest, so 120 GeV proton beam on target. And as we all know, dark photons will be mainly produced either from Bremsstrahlung or from meson decays or also Drellian. So these are all the curves that I showed you here. So the Bremsstrahlung production is this blue curve. Here we have several mesons. Interestingly enough, also relatively heavy mesons can have a sizable production for dark photons, for example, the Eta Prime. And then finally, we have a Drellian production. Okay. Now, this number of events is quite impressive because for these numbers, so we have computed these numbers, fixing epsilon to be 10 to the minus 6, that is pretty, pretty small, right? So of course, the rate will scale like epsilon square. Okay. And so we see that we have a broad range of masses with a very, very large production of dark photons. And as we expect, the production of dark photon will be larger than at the electron fixed target experiment. So here, just to you know, give an example, we are showing the production rate at electron fixed target experiment from Bremsstrahlung using the same you know, type of luminosity and the same type of energy. Okay. Now, having said that, of course, the next thing you have to worry about are acceptances, right? So this is a detector that is, you know, forward, and but what we see is that for minimal dark photon models, the acceptance is pretty good. So here we are showing basically the acceptance, for example, for the Bremsstrahlung process. For a dark photon decaying either after 5.5 meters, 10.5, or 12 meters. And we see that for a broad range of masses of the dark photon, our acceptance is pretty, pretty good. Okay, both in Bremsstrahlung, since basically the dark photon that we are producing is pretty much forward, so the electrons coming from the dark photon decay will fall inside the acceptance of sequest, but also for meson decays. So this is, for example, pion decay and eta decay. Okay. So high acceptance for boosted particles, and then you put the numbers together, and then you see what is the reach. So again, this is the classic epsilon mass of the dark photon plane. So these gray regions are regions that are already probed by past experiments. Okay. And this is the sequest reach with the two luminosities, so 10 to the 18 protons on target, so the luminosity that is approved, as well as this futuristic 10 to the 20. For the three signal regions, fiducial regions that I showed you a few slides ago, okay, so that we see how much we would gain, you know, having larger or smaller fiducial regions, okay. So what we see is that, first of all, we have, as expected, right, a reach to higher masses compared to previous experiments, as well as two little bit larger, quite a bit larger values of epsilon, where actually the dark photon is displaced, but not incredibly displaced. Okay. And here you can see the composition of, you know, what are the several production modes of the dark photon giving this particular reach. Okay. Also, you can put this this plot in a context with all the other experiments that have been proposed. So we can see the reach of HPS for smaller displacements, as well as LHCb. Then we can see the reach for the SHIP experiment, and A62, as well as phaser. Okay. So this is for the minimal dark photon model. Of course, you know, we can investigate many more models to see indeed what is the reach of this experiment. So another model that I wanted to discuss here is this model of inelastic dark matter. So the idea of inelastic dark matter is pretty simple. Basically, you have dark matter, this sky one, that is interacting in an inelastic way. So your dark matter will be charged under some new symmetry, say a new U1 prime, where you have your dark photon. And then you can write down these mass terms, for example, for a fermionic dark matter. You have the Dirac mass plus two Majorana masses. Of course, these Majorana masses are breaking this U1 prime symmetry, so it's relatively, you know, it's natural to have these Majorana masses to be smaller than the Dirac mass. And once that you have this hierarchy here, you get that indeed the dark photon is mainly interacting inelastically, so with chi1 and chi2. Okay? The corresponding elastic interaction is suppressed by the ratio between the Majorana mass and the Dirac mass. Okay? So this is very much in a nutshell the model that we are considering for the inelastic dark matter models. And so what are the signals that we can get from here? So if your dark photon is heavier than dark matter, than two types of dark matter, what can happen is that the dark photon will decay to chi1, chi2 through this inelastic interaction, right? We have seen that actually the dark photon is copiously produced a sequest. That is good because we expect to have a large rate for this process. And afterwards, this chi2, that is this excited state of dark matter, will decay, and then can decay to two electrons plus the dark matter state, so two electrons plus plus missing energy. Okay. Now, what is interesting is that the lifetime of this chi2 will depend on the mass splitting, what I call here delta. Since you know, in general, we are thinking about a delta that is much smaller than one, we expect that naturally this chi2 will be long-lived. Okay. And actually, this is backed up by this plot, where I'm showing the lifetime of this chi2 as a function of the mass of dark matter, as a function of epsilon. Okay, for two benchmark models where you have a 10% of mass splitting or a 5%, the two different colors. And if you can read the numbers, you can see that this chi2 is pretty much long-lived. We are speaking, so here is already 10 meters of displacement. Okay. So naturally, you get again another model with displaced particle chi2, giving you electrons in the final state. So of course, the question is what type of sequest of reach you can have at proton fixed target experiment, and in particular at sequest. So let's see what we have. So let's fix, just as an example, a 10% of mass splitting. Okay. And let's see what is the reach of the several experiments. Okay, so this is a relatively busy plot, so let's go through this a little bit slowly. So this is a mass of dark matter epsilon plane. Again, all the gray regions are regions excluded or probed by past experiments. Okay, so what are these past experiments? So first of all, here you see that we have Babar. Okay. So this is the monophoton search of Babar. And the idea here is that basically you have this decay chain, but the chi2 is too much long-lived, or is giving you electrons that are not seen by the Babar experiment. So you have this bound. Then here, at low mass, you have this LSND experiment. That was running in the 90s at Los Alamos using this 800 MeV proton beam. So at this experiment, we had really a huge production of pions. And pions, of course, can decay to a photon and a dark photon. And then you look for the visible decays of this chi2. And this is the type of reach that you get. Okay. And then finally, we have a last region here in this intermediate mass range. And this is the E-37 experiment. That was an experiment at SLEC run in the 80s. So this is a 20 GeV electron beam fixed target experiment. This is a pretty, you know, large experiment. So here we see that we have a hill of dirt, basically, of that is long, something like 200 meters. The decay region is, again, something of the order of 200 meters, and then you have a detector at the end that is looking for, that was looking for the Chi2 decay products. Okay. Now, if you, for the people sitting down closer to this plot, you can see that there are two lines corresponding to this experiment. The reason that in our paper we put two lines corresponding to this E137 experiment is that, so if you look at this paper, you see that there are different thresholds for the electrons to be detected by this E137 detector. So there are thresholds that either 1 GeV or 2 GeV or even 3 GeV for the energy deposited. And this, of course, makes really a lot of difference, because if you're looking for 1 GeV energy deposited, you have the bound here. 2 GeV would already deplete the bound to this line here. Okay. So beyond the details of what has been already excluded, what you can see is that we can cover this relic line quite well with a mass splitting of 10%. Right. We have maybe some open region here at a relatively high mass, but all the rest is pretty well solidly probed. Okay. So why I'm showing you this? The reason I'm showing you this is that, of course, if you go to lower mass splitting, call it 5%, a lot of these previous experiments will have a much weaker reach. So let's look again at this E137 experiment. Now we have this reach here for 1 GeV energy threshold. For 2 GeV, we would not have any reach. Okay. Also, this LSND reach is quite weaker than before. Of course, Babar, that is an invisible search, is still there. But we see that we have plenty of regional parameter space for this relic line that is unprobed. Okay. And actually, so we computed the reach for Sequest. Again, the solid line is for this 10 to the 18 protons on target. And then these are the three fiducial regions for 10 to the 20 protons on target. And we can see that we can cover quite well this relic line up to, say, a couple of GeV until very low, pretty low masses. Okay. Now, what you can see here is that actually you gain quite a lot considering this fiducial region of 5 to 12 meters, because electrons in this case are not going through the K-mag, so they are much more easily in the acceptance of this Sequest experiment. So it will be really crucial for experimentalists to understand what is the feasibility of having basically zero background also for this larger fiducial region, because we see that the reach is much better compared to the 5 to 9 meter fiducial region. Okay. Very good. Of course, you can do another plot, so you can focus on the points of parameter space that are producing the right relic abundance. So for each value of alpha dark and the mass of dark matter, I'm fixing epsilon in this plane in such a way that relic abundance is correct. And what you see is that actually, if you are between this line here and this line here, you are probing the entire region of parameter space by Sequest. Okay, and the white region, as we can guess, are regions that are not yet probed. Okay. So before closing this talk, I'm not sure how much time I have, but I wanted to comment on a couple more opportunities for this experiment. Because so far, as you have seen, I was just focusing on dark sectors that are giving you electrons in the final state that are displaced. Now, we would like to understand what other type of signatures we could look for, and what models we could probe with possible upgrades of this experiment. Let me give you a couple of examples. Okay. So one example I like to give is this example that where you have a scalar that is leptophilic, namely is coupling only to the leptons of the standard model, with couplings that are proportional to the corresponding masses. Okay. Now, these scalars here are generically a little bit more hidden than the scalars that are mixing with the Higgs of the standard model, because they couple only to leptons. You might wonder about how to produce these scalars at proton fix target experiments like SeaQuest. And there is a very interesting production through the radiation from muons. So basically, the idea is that SeaQuest or any proton fix target experiment will produce tons of muons, right? For example, from pion decays. And then these muons can simply radiate a scalar that is subsequently decaying, for example, to electrons. Okay. So production rates are again pretty large. So you can see what type of bound you can get on this signature at SeaQuest, where you have your scattered muon and then the two electrons. And so this is again the plane or the mass of the scalar and the coupling with muons. Again, gray regions are the regions already probed. And these purple regions here are the regions that might be probed in the future by SeaQuest with the two luminosities. And we see that we are covering additional parameter space with not too small g mu that are still open, so not probed yet by any experiment. Okay. Also, what is interesting in this plot is that there are additional experiments that are proposed using the same type of signature, for example, this Na64 muon experiment, or this experiment here proposed for Fermilab that is using the muon beam of the G-2 experiment. You have a question? Yeah, so as you can see in this plot, I'm focusing on masses that are below the dimuon threshold. Okay. Now, you might do the same type of analysis above. It's more difficult, and the reason being that basically, if you are above, typically this scalar will be more prompt, will decay more promptly, if you don't go to G mu that are pretty small. Right. So if you go to G mu small, also the production rate will be small. So it's and also background will be larger. So it's not that easy. That's why, here we are focusing below the muon threshold. Yeah. Also, additionally, here we see some interesting possibilities for Babar and Bell, where basically you produce the scalar in association with two taus, and then the scalar is decaying to two electrons or muons. Okay. So this is an example that I wanted to give. And the last example, so the last model I wanted to show you for SeaQuest is, so I want to ask, what about axions, right? Can we do something for axions at this proton fixed target experiment? So this is a very minimal piece of Lagrangian that you can write down for the axion talking to the photons of the standard model. Then again, you can do the same type of production mode for the axion. So SeaQuest, as well as all the proton fixed target experiment, will produce tons of photons. And then these photons can radiate an axion that then decays to photons. Okay. Now, of course, here, this is a totally different game because we really to investigate what type of backgrounds we have for multiple photon signatures. So some estimate that we did telling us that maybe if you add a few meters of iron on top of the dump that SeaQuest has already, this background won't be that large. And this is basically the reach that we found as a function of the mass of the axion and this coupling constant for the two luminosities, assuming this dump that is a little bit bigger than what is now. Okay. And then what we can see is some additional reach, some reach on this part of the parameter space that is not yet probed. Okay. So this leads to my conclusions. So I hope that I convince you that there are plenty of opportunities for this for Fermilab, for this SeaQuest experiment to probe dark sectors. What is nice of this experiment is that this is already existing, and it would be really nice to understand possible upgrades or the accumulation of more and more luminosity could buy for probing dark sectors. And I wanted to show you a few models that we have investigated that show indeed the power of this SeaQuest experiment. Okay, thanks.
Thanks very much, Stefania. Any more questions? So can you go back to the one slide back? Yeah. So when I look at all those exclusion limit or sensitivity limit, it's always like go like this shape, right? Is there any experiment you can go, let's say, vertically above that to cover the whole open range? Just.
Well, you're thinking.
Yeah, right.
Well, doing this, I mean, of course, it depends on the model, right, that you are thinking about. So for this minimal model here, where you have only one coupling with photons, no, of the axion, going in this direction is telling you that also the lifetime of the axion is changing pretty much, right? Mm-hmm. So in this sense, you have to think about different experiments to probe really different lifetimes of the axion. So having said that, I think that there should be different, you know, experiments that are complementary to try to really probe broadly the axion in different lifetime regime, basically. Don't know if it answered too. Yeah.
So I wanted to ask you about the practicality of getting up to the 10 to the 20. So the limitation at Sequest, is that coming from the fact that they're putting beam into NUMMI, and so you can only take beam, you know, periodically? Or is it an actual limitation on the luminosity that you can extract and get around to where they are at? Because that was always a lower intensity line.
Yeah, so so presently, yeah, indeed, they are collecting 5% of the main injector beam, right? With this 5% of luminosity, they were able to collect this 10^16 protons on target in 5 days of running. So if you scale it up, so this 10 to the 18 seem to be something feasible that is possible to collect, say, in 2 years of time scale.
Right, that one makes sense to me. Is the 10 to the 20?
Yeah, for the 10 to the 20, of course, yeah, this is pretty much optimistic in terms of luminosity. Of course, as you know, there is you know, this proton improvement plan that is going up a little bit, you know, will get more intensity in the future. Plus also, you know, this 5%...
They need to be down in order to build the dune beam also.
Absolutely,
right?
Yes.
So it's really a question of can that beam line, because you're in the old fixed target line,
that's right.
Can that beam line actually take the intensity?
Yeah, this honestly I'm not sure. So yeah, we decided to show this more for like, you know, understanding what a 10 to the 20 could buy for this dark sector, so we decided to show this luminosity, but it's true that it's not clear to me if 10 to the 20 is something really feasible, or maybe should think about maybe, you know, a few 10 to the 18 or 10 to the 19. This is something for the future beyond, you know, the 2019 that I think would be really important to understand, absolutely. Yeah. And also, I mean, just, you know, for comparison, this 10 to the 20 protons on target is the luminosity that is, you know, proposed for the SHIP experiment. So this is a sort of a round number that allows us to do a little bit of comparison. That's why also we chose it.
It may be quite possible.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's see, since you're on this slide, I didn't quite understand the significance of this possible ECAL getting put in here. That had no impact on the E plus E minus results you showed, right?
No, actually it does. So this is so if you look at the experiment as it is now, so they are able to reconstruct it would identify muons very, very well, but they don't have a calorimeter, so for electrons they are pretty much limited. So all the reach that I showed you, no, for the several models, it's really focusing on electron signatures, so this is really to make the physics case to install this electromagnetic calorimeter here.
Okay, so they all assume that that is actually installed.
That's right. Now, of course, I mean, you can do exactly, you know, the same type of analysis for muons. So, no, you take a dark photon, you let it decay to muons, or also this inelastic dark matter, instead of putting electrons here, you put muons, and you do, again, the analysis, right? So, let me... So they reach as soon as you open up, you know, this decay channel to muons will be relatively similar. The main question is, of course, backgrounds.
Right, the background.
So the background is something that, as theories, is much more you know, complicated to estimate for dimuons. And but this is something that they are, I mean, experimentalists are currently doing. So what they are doing is actually analyzing this amount of data for displaced muons and interpreting this data in terms of dark photon decaying to muons and so on and so forth. So what we decided to do is really to focus on this possible upgrade because it's easier for theorists to understand backgrounds, plus it's telling us if indeed this is ECAL is an important upgrade or not.
Okay, and can you just say, I mean, is this ECAL available or what's the likelihood this thing's gonna be?
Yeah, so this is an ECAL that they are planning to take from the Phoenix experiment. So as far as I know, but this is, I'm not really sure of that. So this calorimetry is already, probably already at Los Alamos, and they're discussing how to install it, if to install it, and so on. But it seems, so they have this calorimeter, basically. So, and of course, I mean, they actually what is important of this exercise of understanding the physics reach is that, so there is the idea of really writing a white paper, so it's a proposal for this upgrade to take place in the summer, basically. So that's why this E plus E minus investigation is really crucial.
Yeah, I was just gonna come back to the first comment and discuss the bullet shape thingy.
The
which if you go up one slide, one more. Stop.
Yes.
The question about the typical shape of that thing. And the other point is that once you start going up in epsilon, then you reach the pumped decay regime.
Yeah.
And then it's basically finding a very tiny bump over a very large background. And that's extremely annoying and takes a lot of data. I know you kind of only slowly dig down.
So actually, for the background, I'm not sure I agree. Because, I mean, here what we are... So I agree that here the lifetime is typically small, no? But here, for the reach, we are always asking that a dark photon decays in this fiducia region. So at the end of the day, we are always asking that the two electrons are originating from this few meters of displacement. Okay.
Yes. If you want to go in between, that's where.
Here, above, that's where the thing
is getting dicey.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, this is the famous region that is very hard to cover. There are there are no plans, as you know, for HPS as well as LHCb. And actually, LHCb is quite an interesting. So this is a proposal, right? That with LHCb, either from D meson decays or just studying di muon. Spectra, you might be able to probe all this region. So this is probably, the best way to probe there. And three tiny regions already for LHCb. But yes.
Is there any search for axion like particles? Is there any search for cover this Perlman's region?
Can you repeat?
Just go to action slide.
Yeah.
I see that wedge between bare tooth and the cover somehow.
So here you mean?
Right.
Yeah, that is the same type of problem, right? That here you have something that is just slightly displaced. So honestly, I don't know what would be the best way to probe this region, honestly. Yeah.
Okay. Let's thank Stephanie again. So that's concluded the section this afternoon. Let's thank all the speakers.